Its pose is more upright, the face spiritual, and the dress not exactly the same. There is a firmness, a decision, and an appearance of calm and contented happiness in the face which is absent in the Kartas soft-visite. It is a work of art. I can only say this of one other picture in my collection. They are all interesting, and each has its peculiar test value, but some of the dresses are stiff, and there are many anatomical deficiencies. This one, however, is without a flaw, and there is just sufficient difference between it and the photograph to show distinctly to the most casual observer that one is not a professional copy of the other. By this time the Bangs sisters and I were, more or less, on the terms of fellow students, and they offered to give me any test I desired. It was arranged that in future I should bring my own slated rubber bands and ink. It was on this evening that Dr. Hudson took the message from me that he carried to Rochester and wrote through Mrs. Georgia a week later, see Chapter 5, January 21, 1909. Atmospheric conditions good. With May Bangs from 10.45 to 12.30. I took with me two slates a little larger than those of the Bangs sisters. The edges were covered with woolen stuff, as were theirs, to exclude the faintest ray of light. I also took six India rubber bands, a 5-cent bottle of ink mixed with citrate of lithia, and a letter to an old friend, Sir A. G., who had been in spirit life some years. I have already referred to a discussion which took place in London before my departure regarding the desirability of finding out if the ink used in the reply letters was the same as that in the vessel on top of the slates. It was obvious that, if this could be satisfactorily established, we should have got more than halfway to proving the supernormal character of the writing. On that occasion Sir William Crookes happened to be present, and suggested that I should mix lithium with the ink. Spectroscopic investigation would enable him to say if the two inks were, or were not, identical. Needless to remark, I adopted his kind advice, and, before starting for America, I bought a small quantity of citrate of lithium from Messrs. Cruise and Co., Dispensing Chemists, 63 Palmerston Road, Southsea. A 5-cent bottle of ink was bought at the fair, in Chicago. About one-third of it was poured out, the whole of the citrate was poured into the bottle, and well shaken up. From this mixture a little cup was filled by myself and put on the slates. The bottle was then corked and put into my coat pocket. The letter that I wrote to Sir A. G. was as follows: Dear Sir A., I had the pleasure of hearing you at Detroit on the 9th, when we had a chat about the Maine disaster. The ideas you then expressed did not coincide with your opinion while in Earth life. Will you kindly identify yourself as well as possible to me, and tell me what you now know as to the loss of the Maine? Yours very sincerely, W. Usbenmore. Sir A. G. held the position of English Consul General in Cuba during the Spanish-American War. We had held conversations in London, after he retired, on the catastrophe, and his opinion was that it was due to some want of precaution on board the ship, not to the outside explosion of a mine. At Detroit he had expressed the opposite view, see Chapter 8. The reply was as follows: I am glad to come to you today and thank you for the privilege you grant in this grand phenomena, demonstrative that life is indeed eternal. There are many subjects I would love to converse with you, giving my knowledge as gain from the higher side of life, but I see you have placed before me, in your letter of today, the subject of the Maine disaster. Well, my good friend, I did come to you on a recent communication differing very much indeed in ideas of this disaster from my opinion when in Earth form. When I reached life, and learned of the true life and greater possibilities, this was one of the main subjects that interested me. My sympathies and indignation was touched deeply over the matter when in the physical form, and so little of the real foundation of the disaster could be reached that I carried the desire of proving definitely the secret with me into my new life. I have since looked very closely into the entire subject and modus operandi, and solved the mystery. This I imparted to you in my recent conversation. Thus my change of opinion since entering the higher life. But, my good friend, I have also learned that all the circumstances of earth life are for a purpose. Looking from a material standpoint, many incidents, conditions, etc., would seem very unnecessary to the rounding out of a perfect life here. Yet, if all was perfectly smooth, uniform and harmonious, there would be no inquiry, that disposition or inclination to greater knowledge. And without the wrong you would not be able to judge the right. So all the mistakes, disappointments, and failures in life are a necessary lesson that we shall all understand sometime when we start as equal in the higher realms of eternal life. Mine has been a wonderful experience since passing through the great change, and I find today that summing up all the problems solved, I have, as yet, only just begun. Life is indeed wonderful, and the more we learn of its laws, purposes and possibilities, the greater our experiences here and hereafter, the more fully we realize that which time and eternity holds for us. I am glad to have met you in this way, my good friend, and I shall hope to have the privilege of coming frequently in thought exchange. I shall be glad to give you further information on any subject you choose to the best of my present knowledge and experience, gathered in my new life. Yours as of Earth, A. G. There is a resemblance between the handwriting of this letter and the other two. 70. Directly we went into the room, I asked May Bangs to sit on the opposite side of the table to that where she usually sat. "Change the table round," she asked. "No," I replied, "I want your drawer my side. You take out of the drawer what you want and put it on a chair or table beside you." She said, "Very well, I will do so." She simply asked to see the letter, and she held my slates while I put round them four rubber bands, two one way, to the other. I then poured my own ink into the little vessel, which holds about a teaspoon and three quarters. The card was put over all. We held the card and slates together for about 5 minutes, then she leant back in her seat and occasionally wrote on her pad, talking all the time. She told me the contents of my letter to Sir A. G. The reply took 1.5 hours to write. Probably my changing the conditions in the room had some effect in delaying the writing. There was a note from Iola on the back of my short letter to Sir A. G., which referred to some chaff that occurred during the sitting with reference to certain erroneous spelling in a previous letter. On the outside of the envelope were the words from Sir A. G., in handwriting different to the above note and also to the writing of the reply letter. The signature of the latter bore some resemblance to that of my friend in Earth life, but not sufficiently so as to be quite sure that it was his. At 4:00 p.m. this letter was posted to Sir William Crookes. 71. On the same evening, January 21, 1909, I sat with May Bangs from 7:15 to 8:50 for a reply to a letter I had written in the afternoon to Cleopatra. The atmospheric conditions were bad. It was raining, and the air was heavy and close. This letter also occupied 1.5 hours. The psychic sat in her usual place. As before, I used my own ink mixed with lithium, my own slates and bands. The conversation of May Bangs showed some knowledge of the contents of my letter, but not of all. My letter containing a request that Cleopatra would cause her portrait to be precipitated at 10:30 on the following morning, and began in this way: "Will you precipitate your portrait on the canvas tomorrow at 10:30, and will you at such words or signs as will be recognized by an experienced student of Egyptian history?" The following are extracts from the reply: "My good friend of Earth, you have been told that I have come into your life for particular purposes, and it is true. A long, long time I have been on the spirit side of life. Ages it is as you calculate time, and during that period I have passed into realms far remote from Earth. All that was near and dear to me of your sphere have long, long since joined me, and also advanced through numberless spheres. Truth is ever uppermost in the soul's ambition, and the time has come when mortals shall come further into the light. There are many mysteries that only spirits of long time, experience, and study can impart to those of your sphere with any degree of understanding and practical application. So it is that I have come into your life to aid in this very desirable work, and I have chosen you as my subject through whom to work. I know of your earnest, honest desire to fathom for yourself and the world this great momentous question. And I am bringing to you these different phenomena in evidence of my presence in introduction of my identity. I am very desirous. You my portrait through this influence and the good artist that is also high and proficient in his art knowledge that you may know me better. And so from that chain of harmony and receptivity that will ensure the highest spiritual good. In brief, I desire to come to you through your own psychic power and receptivity that is gradually unfolding as you continue in your research. I promise to come to you in likeness, dress, and all the characteristic emblems true to my native land of Earth here that I am sure will be recognized by experienced students in Egyptian history. As you open the way, for the present all these wonderful experiences are for you alone. They will bring the truth and light in such a way that shall demonstrate to others, and make thought. Yes, people of different spheres live together in spirit life. This truth I will explain to you again when better conditions and space affords opportunity. It is always most wise to anyone, in the morning hour for spirit phenomena when the live current is at high tide as it were. As you gain spiritual knowledge here, so do you prepare yourself spiritually for a higher understanding in the life to come. Your chances for advancement are good in the life to come. My good friend, I have not come to you at best this evening. I shall therefore ask another opportunity at your pleasure and convenience. In guidance, Cleopatra. Of course I am not in a position to assert that the Cleopatra of history wrote this letter. Cannot possibly tell whether it was a personation or not, I have no means of doing so. The immediate interest in the letter does not, in this case, lie in the identity of the writer, but in the nature of the ink with which it was written. The writing is not dissimilar to that in the reply from Sir A.G. It seems highly probable that all the letters are written, or precipitated, by the same spirit, a writing guide of the psychic, whom the individuals on the other side use as we do a typist. The letter was mailed to Sir William Crookes the following morning, January 22, 72, January 22, 1909. Atmospheric conditions were bad, it was raining outside, and the air was heavy and close. Sat with the Bangs sisters for a picture of Cleopatra. As before, two canvases were produced, covered with blank drawing paper, laid face to face, and held up against the windows, the bottom of the canvases, in this case, resting on the sill of the window, as they were much larger in size than those used for the two portraits of Iola already obtained. I sat between the psychics, as on previous occasions, my eyes looking straight into the center of the canvases from a distance of 2 feet to 2 feet 6 inches. We took our places at 10.55. About 11.5 a form began to appear, and it was roughly finished in 10 minutes. We were then directed, by taps on a slate, to put the canvases on the table and sit around it. We moved the table to the center of the room, placed the canvases flat upon it, covered them over with the felt tablecloth, and sat around as directed. At 11.30 we were informed that the picture could be raised. The canvases were now separated and the picture put on a sofa in a neighboring drawing room. In all precipitations through the mediumship of the Bangs sisters, the picture is found to be on the further side of the canvas which is next to the sitter. The stuff of which the picture is composed is damp, and rubs off at the slightest touch, like soot. Notwithstanding this, the paper on the canvas furthest from the sitter is unsoiled. The picture, while in progress, can be seen clearly through the back of the canvas, but of course it presents the reverse aspect to that when it is framed, left arm for the right, and so forth. The portrait of Cleopatra is practically the same now as it was when it was lifted from the table. Afterwards, but not while I was looking at it, the colors deepened a little, flowers were added to the embroidery of the dress, a ring was put on the finger of the left hand, and the picture acquired a general appearance of greater richness and finish. It was hanging in the lecture room of the London Spiritualistic Alliance for 4 months, and it is therefore unnecessary to describe it. It cannot be called a work of high art, the dress is stiff, and the anatomical features are deficient, but it is undoubtedly a representation of an Egyptian queen, and, considering the way in which it was done, a fine example of spirit power. 73 January 22, 1909. 7.30 to 9.p.m. sat at the Bangs' sister's house for a reply to a letter to Iola. Conditions bad. Raining at intervals outside. I tried sitting with the slates in my hands in the room next to the small seance room. Both Lizzie and May Bangs were in the latter. About 8.30, as this seemed to be a failure, no taps being heard to denote the finishing of the letter, I went into the seance room and sat with May Bangs alone. A few minutes after we were seated, we were told by the percussive signals to look at the slates. We accordingly fixed our attention on the middle of the white card which, I have before explained, covers both slates and ink. After waiting about a quarter of an hour, a bouquet of pink carnations and sweet-smelling narcissi fell from above with considerable force onto the card. This was in full gaslight. May Bangs started as if she had been shot. There was not a doubt as to her momentary fright. Soon after this phenomenon occurred, I opened the slates and the letter. There was no reply. The blank sheets which I had, as usual, enclosed with my letter remained blank. There was not a word on them. 74 January 23, 1909. I wanted a smaller copy of the profile picture which had been precipitated on January 20. The original picture was placed vertically on the table, and the new canvases behind it. This form commenced profile to left, and changed round during the process of precipitation. The dress was the color of pale lavender. On January 24, I left Chicago for Toledo, leaving directions with the Bangs sisters for the dispatch of the last, small, picture to me, and the others to England. 75 I arrived at Rochester on February 6. On February 14, I received a letter from Sir William Crookes, dated 7 Kensington Park Gardens, February 4, 1909. Dear Admiral Moore, I received your interesting letter a few days ago, and at once tested the ink for lithium, with the following result. A word was cut from sheet 4 of Sir A. G.'s letter, and it was burnt in the spectroscope. Abundant evidence of lithium was obtained. A blot of ink at the foot of the same sheet contained no lithium. A word from Sister.'s letter at the back of yours contained plenty of lithium. A piece of the picture of the hotel, in printing ink, was cut from the heading of the paper. It contained no lithium. The envelope addressed to you to yourself, having on it the words communication from a G, had the word from cut out, and also the word Admiral, in Admiral Moore's own writing, cut out. These were tested in the spectroscope, with the result that the word from contained much lithium, while the word Admiral contained none at all. I have this morning received a letter signed Cleopatra. The ink here also contains much lithium. These results you may rely on as absolutely correct. Is it possible that some hint of adding lithium to ink has slipped out? May I suggest an experiment which may be useful? Go to the medium whence these letters were obtained, taking your own ink and other things apparently as before, but be very careful to have an ink that has no lithium in it. Get a letter as before, and let me test it for lithium. If the medium herself has been using ink which has lithium in it, she will use it again, and will be found out, but if she is genuine, there will be no lithium in the ink in which the letter is written. When I reached home, Sir William told me that some people imagined there was lithium in nearly everything. After he had finished his examination of the letters, he tested a piece of cigarette ash for lithium. It was found to contain it, but the lithium in the ink was certainly 1,000 times as much as that in the ash. The suggestion of again testing the medium, coming from so eminent an authority, was not to be ignored. I could not say for certain that before the second, the Cleopatra, letter was obtained I had not used the word lithium. The psychic and I had got by that time on the terms of fellow students, and she was as much interested as I was in this test. This much I knew, that if, perchance, I had let the word escape me, it would have conveyed nothing to her, and she could not have known where to get the citrate, nor, indeed, what to ask for. But, naturally, my mere assertion of this would not have satisfied Sir William. Having plenty of time, I returned to Chicago, 600 miles, and visited May Bangs on the morning of February 27, 1909, with every sign of wanting another test letter, taking my own materials, together with a small bottle of common ink. The sealed letter this time was written to a mutual friend of Sir William's and mine, and the usual four blank sheets of hotel paper were enclosed. The ink used in the reply has been found by Sir William to contain no traces of lithium. I am greatly indebted to Sir William Crookes for so kindly interesting himself in my investigations. His tests have enabled me to feel sure of my ground. In the evening of Saturday, February 27, I sat for a reply from Iola, and obtained it in 40 minutes. The contents were chiefly about a full-length picture of herself, to be done on Monday, March 1, and a portrait of Hypatia which she requested me to sit for, see Chapter 5. It was decided that both should be precipitated on the same day. 76, on Monday, March 1, 1909, I went to the Bangs sisters' house, and found that they had sent to the town for two panel canvases, and there was considerable delay. At last they arrived, covered with paper that was wet, and I exposed them in the sun for about 25 minutes to dry. We sat for the full-length picture of Iola at 11.40. At 11.46 the figure appeared on the further side of the canvas next to me. It was roughly finished by 11.51, and placed on a chair at the side of the room still developing. At 12.10 we were told to cover it over and leave it, and return at 3 p.m. The mediums were not disengaged till 3.30, when we sat opposite the picture again for 20 minutes. Some changes had occurred in the interval, improving the picture much. When I left at 12.10 I had expressed the opinion that the figure, then with bare arms, was too girlish, and I had also wished for a locket and chain to be put on the neck. I left a locket, similar to the one worn by Iola in Earth Life, close to the picture. On my return that arms were covered with sleeves, and the chain and locket were round the neck. The dress also had been finished with embroidery, etc., and other improvements had taken place. At 7.30 p.m. I returned to the house, and found the picture had undergone further improvements, especially in the sky and background. I mentally desired that the locket should be made larger, and that the monogram should be impressed upon it. Now occurred a very remarkable instance of invisible power. Nobody was present when I inspected the locket on this occasion, the mediums were not at home. I removed the locket at the foot of the picture, and took it away with me. My next visit was at 10.20 the following morning, March 2, 1909. I then found that the monogram had been imprinted on the locket, not exactly a copy of the raised letters on the real locket in my possession, but the three correct letters were there, one line was omitted, and the locket itself, as I had requested, was enlarged. Shadows had been added, improving the picture. The likeness is not very good. The interest in this picture does not lie in its fidelity as a portrait, but in the various alterations that were made after it was taken away from the window, and especially in the monogram precipitated at my mental request when nobody was present. 77. I have said above that the picture of Hypatia was precipitated on the same day as the full-length portrait of Iola, that is, March 1, 1909, and I have referred to circumstances in connection with its execution at the end of Chapter 5. We sat at 4 p.m. The picture came very quickly after we were seated, and the form was complete by 4 hours. 5 meters. We were told to take the canvases into the neighboring room, and place them in the full-lighted window. On their being placed in this window, it was observed that the figure had turned round, so that the right hand was on the books, instead of the left. The books and globe became more distinct, and the lower part of the dress developed its full color. At 4 hours. 8 meters. We were told to take the picture down, and it was put on the floor against the wall of the room. The blank canvas was taken away, the back ground now came out, and the picture was gradually completed as I watched it. It is practically the same today as it was at 4 hours. 20 meters. On that afternoon, though there is now an appearance of greater richness and finish. The following incidents with reference to the phenomenon of the appearance of this picture must be noted. A while it was in process of development in the small seance room, a light, pattering noise was heard on the canvases, like fine sand thrown upon paper or glass. The color did not come evenly, as in the other pictures. There was a large, dark patch on the lower part of the dress during the exposure in the small seance room, causing me to think that the canvas or paper was spoiled. See, on removing the canvases to the next room, and putting them, pinched together, in the fully lighted window, the dirty patch developed into the deep blue folds of the dress. If the object of the unseen operators was to convince the sitter that the prepared picture theory was false, they could not have adopted a better means of effecting their object. 78 On March 2nd, I wrote a letter in my hotel to Mr. F. W. H. Myers, reminding him of his promise made at Rochester to endeavor to reply to a letter from me at the Bangs Sisters, at Chicago, and asking him to identify himself as far as he could for the benefit of his friends in England. The following was the reply found in the closed letter between the slates: "My good friend and co-worker, I greet you this evening and am very pleased to come to you. It is very kind of you to give opportunity of all this grand phenomena proving continued life after so-called death. It is indeed unfortunate that spirit is somewhat limited in power of expression, especially so when called upon to relate or recall some special event or circumstances occurring when in the earth form. This, my good friend, is due to the fact that the spirit is over-anxious to manifest in a way the mind suggests, the knowledge of which is perfectly clear to the spirit when in its free atmosphere, but when returning to manifest to mortals the atmosphere and all the conditions pertaining or surrounding to this life is so dense and clouded, that for the time being memory of these matters are renewed only as you make reference to them. Thus again the science of spirit communicating with mortals is so intricate that it is quite difficult to master this alone, without entering into other branches, or is it designed by the great overwhelming power, that intelligence men call God, that mortals should be able to penetrate all pertaining to this or higher life? Were it so, the people of earth would become very dissatisfied with life, and more often tap the time of their stay short, or, in other words, undo the set laws of nature. Conviction is individual. Science in the material world can never reach a point of understanding to explain these things. It is utterly useless. But each member can receive and become satisfied to his or her own understanding. This is all. However, the law of evolution is carrying you onward and upward until you all feel a close correspondence in your own soul to the great one soul, and little things like these manifestations do and will confound the mighty. Give my very best wishes to our great brother and co-worker, Sir Dash, also Sir Dash, Dash. I am with them heart and hand in this great cause, and though they have been able to reach the point where they can determine this question for the world, greater achievements are being made right away, until in a very short time sufficient evidence will be given that may be able to give to the world a clear solution that shall occasion mortals to accept it in great majority as a truth, absolutely fixed truths. I urge you to continue in your research, my friends. I find since entering this great world of worlds that I knew but little, nay nothing, in comparison with that which is to be known. I am still deeply interested in research and shall give you matters of interest from time to time, for our sensitives are growing more sensitive each day, and this is the element required to give freedom of expression that brings evidence of identity. Yours ever in the cause of all truth and light, F. W. H. Myers. We commenced to sit at 7.3 p.m., and at 8 hours, 5 meters, the letter was finished. Lizzie Bangs joined us at 7.55 by request. On both sides of the outside of the envelope was a message from Ioli about her portrait and other matters. The writing inside the envelope occupied 6 pages of hotel paper. It is in the same writing as other letters that I received through the mediumship of the Bangs Sisters. I have not the faintest idea whether it was dictated by Mr. Myers or not. There is nothing evidential in it. I did not know Mr. Myers, but he came to me, unasked, through Mrs. Georgia, at Rochester, and this led me to request him to correspond through the Bangs. It may have been dictated by some personating spirit, for they are legion. I have thought it best to record it, if only to show how much can be done in an hour. The style is not that of Myers, certainly. But, in my opinion, the sentiments are above the modest conceptions of the normal Lizzie Bangs. Moreover, if we are to assume the possibility of the letter being juggled out of the room, which I do not, the time for writing the reply would have to be reduced to less than 40 minutes. Neither on this nor any other occasion was I able to detect any sign of the envelopes having been tampered with. I obtained replies to four other letters at the Bangs sisters' house, and the Hudson communication referred to in Chapter 5. It would be tiresome and uninteresting to record them all, they dealt with private matters,